Teaching meditation can be a deeply rewarding experience. Help others improve their mental and emotional well-being, reduce stress, improve focus, increase self-awareness and self-regulation, all while deepening your own practice and understanding. Join acclaimed author, Buddhist teacher, and Emmy Award-winning musician David Nichtern on Tuesday, May 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a free online discussion on teaching meditation in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern on May 28th.
I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Server Member Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Server Member Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Our parents who are like, you know,
what are you doing?
Who's this man you follow? And, you know, what is your spiritual practice now? But it just evolved like that. And so we just kind of, when we finally came to you with this idea, Ravi, we knew it was an older teen to young adult to adult. It's for even devotees
everyone.
Who've been on this path forever, who want to look at it with beginner's mind or fresh eyes, who want to share it with their children or grandchildren. And so that's kind of the origin story and where we were at with this. And it's been an amazing process just for us personally. In the back of the book, we talk about methods, you know, and Ram Dass says, you know, don't get lost, don't get trapped in the method. It's just a method.
Hey everyone, it's Mind Rolling. I'm back with two wonderful people who happen to be identical sisters who put together this phenomenal book called You Are the Universe, Ram Dass Maps the Journey. How's
Thank
that?
Thank you for having us.
Hi, Ragu. We're here.
Oh, God. You know, in just this, you know, we're going to talk about us and all of that, not just this book, which is, I feel, as we just discussed, really something that's phenomenal just across generations, which is, you know, unusual to get, because this is a book that we would, in my mind, be a be here now for next generation, which was what the intention was. But as we just said, it's reaching far beyond that. I just flipped open, you know, to everybody, there's brown pages in this book, and just like be here now. And it's kind of set up the same way. And it's all Ram Dass's words. And this is probably, so I just wanted to read this one thing to give people an idea of what's in this book. Of course, his whole story is in this book, from life to death. And it includes everything that he represents, all the teachings that he has represented over the years. So from that point of view, it's really reflective of this spectacular teacher's life. Here's what's the essence of it all for me, has always been and continues to be. And this is just one passage. There's another plane of consciousness that is right here, actually. And you look around and you see that everybody's mishpucha, everybody's the family, everybody's a sibling. Or if you go out far enough, there's only one of us. And you really see it. You experience the oneness of things, and it's so connected and so beautiful. This is what satsang or sangha is. This is the community of beings who are acknowledging that dual intention. You work on yourself as an offering to others, and you work with others as a way of working on yourself. The circle is complete, and everything is part of that circle. And ideally, you enjoy the process because it may be an unending one. Right? This is how this book transcends age groups, race, male, female, all of LGBTQ. It just transcends it all. And that's the core of what Ram Dass has represented all these years. So you know what? I thought, I'm not going to do it like an ad for this book. We're just going to talk. That's before we got on. And suddenly that's all I just did.
And I love that you just randomly opened to that page, and that's how we're going to start the call. So that was great.
It really is the kind of crux of, you know, when someone says, who is Ram Dass or what does Ram Dass teach about? I mean, that's everything wrapped up into all of it.
Yeah. That's perfect. Oh, great. Hey, I have to introduce you guys. Go ahead, introduce yourselves. Because when I see that, I mean, you guys that are out there listening on iTunes or whatever, or Spotify, go to YouTube so you can see the two sisters, because we were just at a retreat together and I could not tell them apart. So now I can. I got a name. Amy and Julie.
Yeah.
When we're becoming nobody, it works out, huh?
Yeah, right. Very much so. Yeah.
Okay. Hi. We're Amy and Julie, Amy Butens and Julie Weinstein, and I'm in Santa Fe, New Mexico, just outside in the Sangre de Cristo foothills. And Julie kind of comes back and forth between Santa Fe and LA. And we're super blessed to be part of Satsang. We've been a part of the Satsang probably, I don't know, since the 90s, the mid 90s, mid to late 90s. And between the two of us, we've got four kids, ages 18 to 14. And we're artists and authors and death educators and social justice activists and professionals in that realm, and do a number of other professional and creative things together. And we were so blessed with the opportunity to create a book capturing Ram Dass's real life since post Be Here Now, let's say. So maybe could I just talk a little bit about, you know, how we came to create that project? Or
absolutely. Yeah.
Julie, you want to add anything to that?
Sure. Happy to be here with you, Raghu. We're always happy to be with you and Satsang. And I think, you know, one of the gifts of writing this book, spending the last couple of years, you know, with you and others and each other, is just to keep immersing in the teachings. These are teachings that we came to as teenagers. And I think both kind of felt like a thank God moment for some clarity, for some direction, for some hope, for lots of love, and, you know, kind of shared his wrestlings. I think that the teenage experience is universal. I don't know that we ever really leave that teenage experience as we age. I think we're all still kind of wrestling our way through this life, and probably will in our next incarnations. But we're just super grateful to kind of stumble, each of us, you know, in our own way, stumble upon who Ram Dass is, and build a relationship with him, with his teachings, with people on the path that were also curious. And for the last, you know, couple of years, we've been, you know, putting pen to paper, putting watercolor to paper, and doing a deep dive, like Amy said, into the last 50 years of the archive. Really, how lucky are we to have the audio recordings? Mm-hmm. But this is all his words.
And it's all his words. And so I guess, like, let's talk about the origin story of this book for a minute and kind of what was going on in our lives. So we have these young kids, and we're thinking, where's the resource for the younger generation? We, you know, I wish we had, you know, something we could show them. We could show them Be Here Now, and they could kind of get into that. But they thought, whoa, that's a little far out, or, you know, and you're distilling these teachings. But we just thought, wouldn't it be amazing to have, you know, a beautifully packaged presentation of Ram Dass for these groups? So we started and we thought, oh, let's make a children's book. And then we're like, well, we got to include this and this and this. And then we just realized, this is not a little kid's book. This is, you know, it's not only for teens, but it's for our parents who are like, you know,
what are you doing? Who's
this man you follow? And, you know, what is your spiritual practice now? But it just evolved like that. And so we just kind of, when we finally came to you with this idea, Ragi, we knew it was an older teen to young adult to adult. It's for even devotees who've been on this path forever, who want to look at it with beginner's mind or fresh eyes, who want to share it with their children or grandchildren. And so that's kind of the origin story and where we were at with this. And it's been an amazing process just for us personally. In the back of the book, we talk about methods, you know, and Ram Dass says, you know, don't get lost, don't get trapped in the method. This is just a method. But for us, creating a project like this, and I do recommend this to other people, if you want a method, deepen in the teachings of Ram Dass, write it, listen to him, transcribe his words, paint his teachings, you know, like immerse yourself in a
embodiment.
Yeah. So that's kind of the origin story and what we were doing.
Yeah. So let's go to two little guys in New Mexico. What happened that suddenly, you know, instead of out playing soccer and for you, Amy, doing a drawing and so on, what suddenly tripped you into who's this? Ram Dass?
Yeah. Do you want to?
Yeah. You know, when we started writing this project for the kids, right, we were going to write sort of an extended letter, a little book, a mini book. And, you know, we knew Ram Dass was at the end of his physical life. And we're lucky to spend some time with him and his body. But I think at the time we were really seeing what was coming as parents. You know, we had these young kids at the time. I mean, they're still young, thank God, you know, but then now they're all teenagers and, you know, just about to leave the house for college. And, you know, and a couple of years ago, we saw them moving into adolescence and starting to wrestle with the things that most teens wrestle. Who am I? What's the meaning of life? How do I interact with people I don't like? Or how do I explain the injustices of the world? And these are all things that, you know, a lot of, that we still wrestle with, right? Who is God, and what is my relationship with that meaning of God? And, how do I be of use in the world? And so it was like a natural flow in a way. But once we dove in, you know, it's the interconnectedness of everything, sure. But once you dive into Ram Dass's teachings, everything's interconnected. And so more and more just kept, you know, being needed to be written down.
But wait, what about, I'm talking about you. You know,
oh, about us?
I'm talking
a little
about
guys,
you guys.
Us?
Yeah.
Like how we came to this?
Yeah. We were in Texas exactly. at what the happened? Time. We were outside of a city in Texas on the prairie.
We grew up in a really reformed Jewish household. Spirituality wasn't, you know, a topic at the dinner table, that's for sure. But we had a beautiful, let's take these off.
Texas, you were in?
We were born in Texas.
Where?
We were only one of a few.
Outside of Dallas.
Just one of a few Jewish families in Dallas. So kind of grew up in, as, you know, the other. And, you know, I think that really forced us to explore who we were in a sea of conformity. And
sometimes even defend, you know, mm-hmm. when you are othered like that, you really have to defend yourself.
But we had a, you know, beautiful role models as far as social justice and philanthropy, even though we were a poor family, and what it means to feed people, you know, these teachings, Maharaji and Neem Karoli Baba, I mean, Ram Dass were being presented to us. We had no idea at the time. And
how were they presented? Wait, how did you hear
about
that?
Like our mom took in people and fed them, and
our grandmother, you know, as a young child, her family did a lot of refugee resettlement work, and you know, even though we didn't really have much financially, there was always like a spirit of giving,
knitting for the
food,
homeless.
For food, definitely. I mean, a classic Jewish family, feed everyone. We were like, check, yes. Got that.
So we learned these concepts, and we were also raised, you know, we were sent to Hebrew school until 10th grade. Maybe that was just because she needed childcare, but it really left a mark on us and encouraged us. And then come the mid 90s, we hear, you know, the name Ram Dass come up every now and then. We were into the Grateful Dead, and Ram Dass had written this beautiful eulogy, a poem. And I don't even remember what it actually said, you know, finding your true self. And, you know, it had a lot of concepts. And so there was little bits of Ram Dass, like, you know, mid 90s. And we didn't really know who he was more. So anyways, and then I found myself in Florida one time, and I just sat there and I read Be Here Now cover to cover. And then later on, I read Still Here, which was like such a beautiful book, and highly recommend that. But, you know, these teachings.
How old were you?
Kept coming. By that time,
must have been like 19 or 20.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, you were old.
And so that really got us, to, you know, it just, we didn't know that he was going to be such an influence in our life. And in the work we do, we both have a background in death and dying work. And he just really influenced our path. And later on, when we came to New Mexico, I think Julie was the first one to go.
I
it was
come,
in 1996, and she ended up at the Hanuman Taos
at the ashram. You know, and I sat down as a teenager, accidentally, coincidentally, divinely, next to a copy of Be Here Now, who someone had brought, a friend's brother had brought home from Grateful Dead tour. And I was like, what's this? You know, and I think I was probably on mushrooms at the time. And I was like wowing out on Maharaji. And that was my first experience just right there next to me. And I ended up going to college in Santa Fe and, you know, stumbled upon the ashram, as one does as a, you know, freshman in college. And and ended up spending a lot of time, you know, there. I mean, thankfully, you know, my formative spiritual years were sitting at the Tucket chanting chalices. And, you know, it was interesting at the time because I was working at the temple. So on Shabbos, I would go daven on Shabbos, Saturday mornings, and on Sunday, you know, with the minion, and have lox and bagels afterwards at the Oneg. And on Sundays, I would be up with the satsang. P.S. They were all from, you know, the temple, many of them, right? The sort of like Hindus and Jubus of groovy New Mexico, you know, and go on Sundays and have prasad lunch, you know, Indian food after chanting. So it just ended up in this sort of beautiful way. And then Amy had moved out to Santa Fe. Yeah. And we just deepened in the practice together so sweetly. And, you
that's
know,
where I met
raised
you
our kids. Yeah, I met you at the temple. At the ashram. Mm. Raised our babies there. You know, they would play on the playground and we would bring them to the Tucket and, you know, name them at the Torah was open and name them, you know, in shul and then take them to the Tucket. And it's really sweet. Really, really. It just felt real. You know, it felt like this funky realness, which I think we appreciated from the satsang because you can't really get in a lot of places. Well, we didn't certainly get that in Texas. And, you know, what a gift for us to have, like, I mean, if you're in Texas right now, we hope that you find that funky authenticness for yourself or create it. There's someone longing in that giant state for some satsang. And there's amazing fellowships there, too. But yeah, we just felt like we were home. We felt like we were home. And it felt like I don't have to pretend to know or do anything. I don't even have to know all the words to the Chalisa at that point. You know, like, we're here and we're totally accepted. And there's just so much love.
And what about, when did you learn about the core of the teachings, which is the five-limbed yoga? When did you, the five-limbed yoga?
Yeah. And I think it was over a course of time, just coming to really understand this, not only to learn about them, but to put them into practice. Like,
okay, wait, we're not on the same page, Aime.
Yeah, I am. Wait, go with me for a minute. Because in college, we got to take these comparative religion courses.
Yeah.
And so we got introduced to Ashtanga yoga and Patanjali's yoga sutras. And, you know, like we got these concepts that were kind of far out because you never heard of those growing up, you know. And so those core teachings really, I would say, we learned to put them into practice when we had our children.
Would you say? Okay. And for me,
I'm going to explain before you go on.
Okay.
Five-limbed yoga is not what you are referring to. It refers to this group of miscreants who went to India with Ram Dass. And Maharaji said, you're basically, he said, you know, you're all useless. All you know how to do is drink chai,
gossip,
sleep, wander aimlessly about, etc. That's it. We had no you're not meditators, you don't know how to do ritual.
Which is why we felt right at home at the ashram.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. How would you answer that question, Julie?
Well, I mean, on the one hand, like, Raghu, I hear you. And I do, honestly, I authentically, I think that's why we felt at home at the ashram, because it was like, you know, just do your thing, right? Be weird and do your thing and do whatever, stumble on the path. But I will say, in seriousness, though, there is, you know, speaking of the yogas, I mean, the pieces of karma yoga and bhakti yoga really, really resonated. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, you know, and I know for Amy too, maybe when we were in our early 20s or when I was in my early 20s, that was where I had this space to start practicing some of that. You know, the work that we have been doing for, you know, over two decades in death and dying or in social activism, I think really stems from or is rooted in the foundation of karma yoga, bhakti yoga, you know, devotion and service. Mm-hmm. And for us, that is like the, you know, drishti, like that is the spot of focus.
North Star.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The North Star.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely true. I had somebody who just was talking to me about being at, I think it was one of the bigger retreats that we do, either now in Boone, North Carolina, which is coming up this summer, or in Maui, where we were in November, December. And, oh, I know it. it came up in a satsang that I did with some people in Vancouver.
Cool.
Yeah. And they had been there. One of them had been there and asked me. So they actually, they were asking about, because they'd seen the movie Brilliant Disguise. Mm-hmm. And in there is the five-limbed yoga. And they wanted to know what role that played in the lineage of Neem Karoli Baba.
The rascality. Story.
Yeah. So we went through, just like we just did, you know, that basically we were good for only those five different things, what did that really do? It took the self-seriousness about us being on a spiritual path and thinking that there was it was goal-oriented. You do a bunch of meditation rituals, chanting, whatever yoga, whatever you do, you will get somewhere. It just completely undercut that whole thing. So the person said, oh yeah. So, you know, Krishnadas does some nice kirtan chanting. There's chai in the back. People hang out and talk. I said, that's it. That's exactly what it is.
And I honestly, like, how lucky are we? How wonderful. Like, that quality, Ram Dass talks a lot about Neem Karoli Baba's quality of rascality, which I love that word. Like, how Ram Dass is that. But we're a bunch of goofballs. Like, really fumbling our way through, trying, you know, doing. But he also says, like, do you want to die a meditator, become a meditator? Yeah. Or do you want to lose yourself in the meditation? Yeah. Like, you can do that too. You know, he also says, like, right, you want to, like, offer your prayers to Jesus, or do you want to become Christ consciousness? I think is the piece where it's like, oh right, we can just lose ourselves in the silliness of this without taking things too seriously and practice anyways.
But even to the point with Maharaji, as again a scene from Brilliant Disguise, where he tells, so this movie, everybody, like, you've heard me talking about it before, the samadhi of K.C. Tiwari called Brilliant Disguise. And he was a highly accomplished yogi. And one day Maharaji said, well, go over there. There's a fire puja going on. Offerings are being made. It was probably for Durga Puja or something. And he went over there and he's doing the thing like nobody else could. I never see anybody else do ritualistic stuff where the deity actually came down. That was the first time that ever happened. And then suddenly he's relating the story. He said, suddenly there's this shouting at me, right? From Maharaji shouting, basically saying, you fool, what are you doing? Wasting, you're doing all of this puja and stuff and people are starving to death. Stop. Who would do that? What, you know, quote unquote guru would do? I mean,
how about that,
the seriousness of the puja, you know, and he's telling him stop that bullshit and feed people.
You know, you used to tell stories about, and maybe it was Ram Dass too, but you used to tell stories about how you would be sitting, you know, Ram Dass would be sitting in just very serious meditation and, you know, losing himself, going into samadhi, and then Baba would just like toss an apple into his crotch really hard, you know. It was like, what rabbi or priest, you know, while you're offering your prayers, would just toss an apple to break your concentration. Ridiculous.
But this is like, so Ram Dass, and he's like, you need to infuse your life, even your spiritual practice, with humor, you know.
Or, like, don't take yourself so seriously.
Yes,
we're all suffering, and we can have joy. We, you know, both can be true. All can be true.
Well, his thing, you can be on more than one plane of consciousness at the same time, is so very real and relevant. And we actually, when he first started living, Ram Dass, in Maui in 2005, finally, he had been very sick. I guess you guys know that whole story. Yeah, he had sepsis. And we got him out of there and into a house and everything. You know, the first thing we talked about, and this has never actually come to light. In other words, we've never put it out. We did a chat with him one day, a man named David Silver, who was my podcast partner, mm-hmm. In the beginning days of Be Here Now Network, Mind Rolling. Mm-hmm. And it was called The Habit of Honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so much about how meaningful that was for us when we first heard Ram Dass. You know, it was okay, because he was so self-honest about his foibles and so on.
Yeah.
And you had a feeling, okay, it's okay, I can be. You know, I'm not the only one sitting around with these horrific thoughts and dark desires and God knows what. And that was so very relieving, big time, mm-hmm. aside from the transmission of Maharaji, basically, at that time. And through all of these decades, and that, of course, and his. But then you do take a little bit more serious in terms of the way that we do have to do something and deal with. As Maharaji said, I've done everything for you. He said to the Westerners at one point, mm-hmm. "I leave you the mind," which is not a wonderful thought, actually.
You think?
Thanks.
Yeah.
But so it calls. So then, then you start thinking about, you know, stuff that's in the book,
yeah.
That is relevant in terms of what we can do to occupy our time aside from watching Netflix, mm-hmm. to form new habitual patterns at the very least, mm-hmm. that will help extricate out of the what. I call, and I've been working on this thing, the movie of me, basically. And so Ram Dass's first early teaching, which is in here, I mean, I just passed through it, was around the witness, mm-hmm. which is really, it's from Ouspensky. He got it from Gurdjieff and Ouspensky, Ouspensky being a Gurdjieff student. And it was a way for people to identify what was going on in the moment, and now is called mindfulness. Yeah. And a tremendously beneficial practice that can be taken into realms of self-seriousness and other really screwy things, like becoming a better stockbroker once you become more mindful, you know, material stuff.
Right.
Spiritual materialism, as mm-hmm. Trungpa Rinpoche would talk about it. And but so Ram Dass did give tools right at the get-go, and then diffuse them as much as possible with humor.
Yeah,
and I think his honesty was what allowed millions to connect with him, and I hope the teens who read this book still connect with him through his honesty, and not only pick up on that witness and all these other techniques, but also just kind of see him as like a living example who emulates compassion for himself on this path, who's tapped into this divine power that, you know, kind of has this ally rooting for him, guiding him, and the soul, this concept of the soul, and seeing life through that perspective can help you not dissociate, but, you know, witness.
I think, Raghu, that teaching of the witness, and especially the telling the truth,
mm-hmm.
that was really helpful for us as younger people. I mean, it still is now as middle-aged people, and I'm assuming it will be when, you know, we're wise elders as well. No one ever, I mean, our parents, sure, people's parents say all the time, tell me the truth, you know, but that's not necessarily what the teaching is. You know, can we be honest enough with ourselves? Can we like pause for a second in the swirlingness of whatever it is, the teenage drama, the, you know, the self identity crisis in your 20s, whatever it is, can I be honest enough to bear witness to what is? You know, like he would say in his talks, like, holy shit, far out, look at this. You know, there's earthquakes and there's floods and right. All he would go through the litany of, you know, the bad things. Look at this. what is the truth of this? And where am I in this equation? And can I be honest enough with myself? Can I tell myself the truth? Or can I tell my truth to others after I have sat with it enough to know like what the scene is? That it was just a really helpful teaching, and it still is, you know?
Enormously, yeah. I mean, to get a grip on, first of all, stopping to believe in our stories and thoughts is to go inside and actually see the truth of what we do and how we manipulate and how we defend and how we choose, you know, the easy path, you know.
Oh, the roles that we play, you know, I'm the victim, right? Sometimes you are, actually, and you don't admit that too, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super helpful.
Ram Dass went to India in 1966, 7, in there. And he went to Nepal first. But he went because one of the basic motivations was, after all of the psychedelic journeying that he had done through all of those years, he just felt he did not have the correct map. And I'm obviously referring Ram Dass maps the journey. So he wanted to find that, and he thought he would find it in the East. And when he met Neem Karoli Baba, he found it in a human being who had gone beyond duality, who was actually living. I don't know if you know this. You know, the entrance to Kenchi, which is the ashram that we met Maharaj Neem Karoli Baba in, when we were first there, it said, the arch that you would enter through, it said, Param Puja Neem Karoli Baba Advaita Hanuman Temple. Mm-hmm. Advaita, which means non-dual. Mm-hmm. What the hell's non-dual here? This is Bhakti Yoga.
Right.
This is Hanuman. This is Ram and Sita. Mm-hmm. And that is, an extremely telling thing about the reality of what the core of this teaching is. But anyhow, Ram Dass did go there, and he did find the map. And of course, psychedelics were a big part of it for him, given who he was and the experimentation he undertook for many, many years, and then giving it to Maharaji. And all of those stories, several of those stories. What is your all relationship to that, both in thinking of the next gen and, well, first of all, thinking of yourselves and how that has had an influence, and how has Ram Dass influenced you in that whole sphere?
Amy, you want to start that? And then I want to read something too. Sure. Just a very quick thing.
Before we jump into the answer to that, I just want to say, because this is the perfect segue, and I found this really, both Julie and I did, when we had a group of beta readers, and that was, that part in the book, when he met Maharaji, was the number one, like, favorite part, and the feedback was, which we thought, what teen is gonna, like, this might be a little far out for the teens when he meets his guru, you know. The psychedelic part they loved, you know, of course, But the feedback was, I couldn't believe somebody would love somebody that much. Like, that was really so beautiful to hear these teens say that.
Which really made us feel like that universal experience of wanting to be loved unconditionally was understood.
So I think, can I just say really quick, Julie, before you read whatever you want to say,
please.
That psychedelics are a gate, they can be for a certain personality and in the right set and setting, can allow you to get the glimpse of this conscious, this another plane of existence where you feel loved and you feel beauty and you feel unity and oneness with all that there is. And I think that is the gateway into unity consciousness for a lot of people. So what do you want to read, Julie? And then we'll dive into that that conversation, Robin.
And your questions about our relationship with that, to share. I want to offer something which is in the book as sort of a caution. Again, Ram Dass's words, because I think for a lot of people, this is the one place where they trip up, no pun intended, over, you know, they don't want to tell their children about this, or they don't think that their kids are ready yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the folks that are watching that have children, or for the teens or young adults that are watching this later, like, you know, that this is going to come up, or it has come up a million times, or it might be something you're exploring. And so what Ram Dass said very clearly was the psychedelic experience isn't necessarily for everybody. And we need to be sensitive to this. I want to be clear, psychedelics are subject to incredible misuse, especially when they're not approached sacramentally or consciously. It's better if you wait to become somebody before you try to become nobody. Most kids use drugs before their egos are settled. Because they use them prematurely, they lose their ground and could even lose their ability to function in society. I honor psychedelics as a method, but I say there are other methods. The game is not to get high. The game is to become free. Mm. And I want to ground in that because it's a practice, or it can be. And that's special. And it's also not without its risk. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, you know, there's, in fact, the book he put out in the late 60s with Sidney Cohn, mm-hmm. it's called LSD. And nice. it's a manual for all of the precautions that one needs to take when dealing with a psychotropic substance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so they did a good job of that. In fact, so this is a re-release of that book, actually.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. But the guts of it are really important. I think when you create that set and setting that they talked about so much, when you create that in terms of this kind of, it's much more of a ritualistic approach, there is, especially with people who have experience in this area and have done it before and help guide people, then I think I wouldn't agree as far as risk is concerned. Obviously, in those kinds of circumstances, I think you're in a safe place. It's when you go off on your own and you're young and you feel you can just go clubbing and stuff like that. That's, mm-hmm. you know, when you end up potentially having a problem. And basically, that's not what it's for. And it's not a matter of, okay, we just want to have a fun time.
Right.
You know, there's all kinds of low-dose ways to do that. But if you're actually having, a true experience, which opens up, as Huxley said, the doors of perception, mm-hmm. then it has to be within that formality of set and setting. I just wanted to add that.
And yeah. I think you're 100% right, but I think where we go wrong as parents or, you know, community leaders, teachers, whatever, is we delay this conversation. Like, oh, it's taboo to talk about this with our kids, or why, you know, we use the word, we loop these chemicals, psychedelics, or plant medicine into the same conversation as drugs, and we keep this, you know, for later in life when they're ready. And I think it's kind of a failure. And I think that Ram Dass presented it beautifully in this book. Like, there is a gentle way to talk about this and to start introducing these concepts and make it a conversation that we can have. I don't know. I think it's different for all families, but like the stance that Julie and I took is like radical honesty with our kids, but let's start laying things out early in life so it doesn't seem so taboo. Let's talk about psychedelics or substances that alter your consciousness. What is consciousness? What are those? you know.
And what are you searching for, right?
Right. Or what are you using that for? Or how do you use them? Or what? How do you safely use that? Or mm-hmm. how do you avoid that until you're ready? Or so I think creating a dialogue with the kids around that, and like, this is a YA, this is a young adult subject, you know, drugs, sex, suicide, all these things that kids, you know, face, I would say even early on, they're watching their parents deal with it. They're intuitive. They know what is going on in society. They know what, you know, things are before we think they do, I think. And so I think Ram Dass kind of paved the way for everyone to make this a kitchen table topic, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. It became one for me, unbeknownst to me. I had no idea it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. My granddaughter just turned 13, you know, so we had a bat mitzvah and everything. Anyhow, I was just hanging with her and my son, and she asked, she's been on, I've had her on podcasts, by the way.
She's awesome. Yeah.
Really well
Zoe.
Spoken.
I mean, beyond. So she asked my son about his relationship with my father, and my father was like, you know, PTSD, World War II veteran, you know, despotic, you know, I had a terrible time with him. And so my son related something that happened to him along those same lines. And so it led me to say, but Zoe, we were saved because my father came to India because he wanted to see how my brother and I were doing, supposedly.
Yeah, see for himself.
So he came there, and Maharaji said to me, did you give your father the medicine after some preliminary stuff about knowing who got on the plane with him? And my father was like, oh my, you know, how does anybody know anything about me that I don't even remember? Anyhow, he said, did you give him the medicine? I said, yeah, he had a cold. So I gave him some some aspirin. Mm-hmm. And then he said, no, the yogi medicine that Ram Dass gave me. I went, acid? And my father, sitting there, 50-odd-year-old, you know, advertising guy like Don Draper out of that show.
Right.
And he's LSD? And sure enough, in Benares, where just by where the burning ghats are for thousands of years, 24/7, my father, who thought he wasn't afraid to die, he was so out of it, you know. He had lost all connection until that moment, and had, you know, and it wasn't a transformative trip because whatever I got, somebody gave me a hit. It wasn't enough to make you question whether you, you know, who you are that deeply, but it did hit him on the death level. With dead body, putting money on, you know, he had a whole death trip.
Wow.
Yeah. In Benares.
Set and setting.
Great. That sounds so relaxing.
That was a little different set and setting for dad, but, you know, it was cool. And we ended up back with Maharaj, who never said a word, and then told him stuff about this horse farm and saved a horse that nobody could know, and he fell on the floor. From that moment on, we had a wonderful relationship. My whole family came together. So Maharaji threw dynamite at him with this acid thing and completely changed the course of our life. But more the point of the story is my granddaughter, who I think they've broached it, you know, my son and daughter, I think they've broached the subject with her in a way, you know, in a very measured way, but I'm not quite sure because I wasn't there. But she was like, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She wanted
my
to
great grandfather.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
So the way that it happened was so cool because of her curiosity.
Yeah.
Because she is very, very curious and very measured in her thinking and so on and so forth. So you just never know. You never know.
I think it's important to have the conversation, and you can use Ram Dass as the segue into it with your kids if you wanted, you know. Thanks for sharing that story.
So you guys, aside from everything, we didn't even say some of the wonderful work that you guys do, particularly I'm thinking both of you work with chaplaincy in prisons. Is that true?
I am a chaplain in the jails and also in the justice movement. And I have been going in. It's been great because I get to talk about Ram Dass sometimes too. But I go into the jails as a chaplain and provide pastoral counseling and spiritual support. Amy and I do a lot of writing for materials that I take into the jail and that are also disseminated throughout the country at other prisons and jails through this network of care providers as well.
And then we have a background in the death and dying work. We're both certified thanatologists, integrative thanatologists, and we...
What's that?
What's that word? Basically, it's called a thanatologist. Yeah. And so we teach on the subject and we work with families, grieving families and people who are dying. And we also prepare bodies for burial. We've done that for quite some time. And then we also work on a number of different multimedia projects, currently working on a stop motion animation film. And we have another book in the works about Dr. Mengele's twin experiments in the Holocaust. It's kind of a heavy subject, but so we're kind of all over the place, but like I said, there's a little bit of Ram Dass in everything we do.
I guess I would sum it all up to say, like, our background is in grief, loss and trauma.
Right, well, talking about somebody who worked in that area is completely, for all of the decades that he taught, you know, even before he was Ram Dass, before he entered into that field.
You know, these two books you asked about, like, you know, growing up, I've put stickers on them over the years. How can I help? His book, and also Mirabai Bush and Ram Dass wrote this beautiful book called Compassion in Action. And you should see these. They're all marked up. I mean, Amy's seen them highlighted, marked up, and just a, you know, deep guidance for anybody. Really, you don't have to work in a classic helping profession. And he even talked about getting beyond the helper role. But those were formative and foundational books.
All of the books are available at ramdass.org/shop, I think.
Yeah.
But you'll find the store there. I think it's shop. And particularly, of course, get You Are the Universe, because it's just absolutely a wonderful representation of Ram Dass from birth to death and everything in between. And we were talking about how many people earlier, before we got on, how many people are being moved by it. It's both so direct and well spoken, because Ram Dass is so well spoken, but the way you guys picked up those particular passages that you put together, and not to mention artwork, like, look at
I know, Amy did such a beautiful job.
Amy, really, I mean, people are just saying, wow. You know, just some of this, I love this.
I love that iguana.
It's so great.
And it goes so well with the story. I mean, if folks know, and then you'll read that piece of the story, you know, it's just the nuances of the journey.
Yeah, so...
But we're so grateful for all the positive feedback, and thank you to everybody who's leaving reviews and helping spread the message.
Oh, yeah, that's a good thing. Everybody, if you bought a book on Amazon and you leave a review, it's going to help the visibility of the book on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we want to share it as much as possible, so whatever you can do to help everybody out.
But just to know, it's worldwide. Like, we're seeing it in Oslo and Germany and Israel and... Just, it's incredible to know that Ram Dass's message is touching.
Romania, yeah.
It's incredible. It's pretty special.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, thank you guys for being here.
Thank you
for doing the book and approaching us to help get it out there. This is evergreen for sure. And it's quite wonderful. So everybody, all of the links and books that we've been talking about, and you know, Ram Dass's whole library is available at ramdass.org/shop. and you can get them easily there. And it also goes a long way to help support what we're doing at Love, Serve, Remember Foundation. So again, thank you guys. This is BeHereNowNetwork.com. Go to BeHereNowNetwork.com/mindrolling to get all the links and everything else and find out more about all of the wonderful teachers and podcasters that are on the network. So we'll see you next week.
Lots of love.
Thank you. Take good care, everyone.